Okay, remember last time I read from Amos chapter 2, 6 through 8, and I'll just read that again for those who weren't at that meeting, and it was interesting to stumble across this reference to the plot of Brothers K in Amos, and it goes, for the three crimes, the four crimes of Israel, I have made my decree and I will not relent. Because they have sold the virtuous man for silver, and the poor man for a pair of sandals. Because they trample on the heads of ordinary people, and push the poor out of their path. Because father and son have both resorted to the same girl, profaning my holy name. Because they stretch themselves out by the side of every altar, on clothes acquired as pledges, and drink the wine of the people they have find in the house of their God. And I wouldn't be surprised if it can, you know, the whole thing relates to the plot of Brothers Karamazov. Nothing that I have read links, it makes me think that Dostoevsky was conscious of the connection, but it was probably a subconscious helper to developing his plot, especially the first six verses, which are a quick summation of the exterior plot of the book. Something else that I had noticed quite a while ago, and I think it is one of the important themes in Brothers K, is that it's from Genesis 9, 21, 25, and Noah, remember what Noah did when he came back from, when the water receded? First thing he did?
Oh, kiss the ground?
Well, he planted grapevines and made wine and got smashed. That's what Noah did. And then what happened? Well, he had three sons, didn't he? And what happened?
They saw him naked.
Mm-hmm. The one son saw him naked, and then how did he respond to his father's nakedness? No, how did the one son that saw his father naked first respond? He ran out and told his brothers. Mm-hmm. And then what did they do? They
got the cloak and put it over their shoulders.
Yeah, and they walked backwards, right? Mm-hmm. They walked backwards into the tent where his father was naked and put the cloak over him to cover his nakedness. And when Noah woke up, what did he do?
Nothing.
Yeah, what did he do? He cursed the son that had seen his nakedness. Now that's one of the big themes of this book, is wrapped up in that story, and I'll read it. Ham, Canaan's ancestor, saw his father's nakedness and told his two brothers outside. Shem and Japheth took a cloak and they put it over their shoulders, and walking backwards covered their father's nakedness. They kept their faces turned away and did not see their father's nakedness. When Noah awoke from his stupor, he learned what his youngest son had done to him. And he said, accursed be Canaan, he shall be his brother's meanest slave. Now, Dostoevsky does some interesting twists here, because Alyosha is the youngest son. And Alyosha, of all the people, is talked about as knowing his father, and yet does not respond to him as Ham did. Whereas the other sons, in many ways, do respond as Ham did.
In judgment?
In a kind of judgment. Now, what kind of judgment would that be? It's you have to do some putting yourselves in the shoes of Ham here. But what is going on in his mind when he goes in and he sees his father naked and he runs out and tells his brothers, hey, come look, Dad's smashed out of his mind and naked.
Was he thinking that?
Hmm?
He ran out ashamed, wasn't he?
Was he ashamed? He says, come and look.
But their response was...
What was their response?
To go in backwards and not look.
Yeah, and not to look. And he did look. Well, what...
But by their response, what... I'm thinking, how was it he told them about it? It would seem that he would be coming from a selfhood of shame, that they would take on that sort of action to go in backwards. It doesn't sound as if he went, ran out and said, come and look.
Well, the fact that he did get the curse, and the fact that I, when I see someone who I believe to be mighty, have a response of contempt at seeing someone else's nakedness, and see that as a curse-worthy feeling, I put myself in Ham's shoes, and that's what I did. Mm-hmm. I went out and said, look at Dad. And in a negative sort of way. Now, seeing nakedness is not, it's not just a physical description that you're seeing.
Anything.
It can be an attitude of mind, can it? Well, what kind of attitude of mind would it be? This will make a lot. Hello, Nancy. Glad to see you up. What kind of attitude of mind?
It seems to me there'd be a choice. Depends on your character. Either you have that feeling of having the goods on this person,
mm-hmm.
and that you are low, I am, that action-reaction mm-hmm. thing, putting yourself on top, or else you feel as though you suffered a great loss.
Mm-hmm.
Feel naked yourself.
And you protect yourself from, it's like Ham saw the weakness of the father and then responded with going telling people about it. And the other sons. The other sons now, of course, being told about it, being told about it, in a sense they know it, but they respond to a fact in a different way. Ham responds to the fact of Noah's nakedness, Noah's weakness, in a certain way. The other brothers respond in another way. Now they still know. They know the same facts. In a sense, they can conjure up the same picture in their minds. They've been told what happened, but they respond in a different way. And I think that's the clue, the response, I think is the clue to the curse and to the blessing. The sons that went in backwards, now Noah knew that these other sons came in backwards and put the cloak over them, but he blessed them. They knew the same fact that Ham did, but he blesses Japheth and Seth and curses Ham. I think linked in the New Testament, many of, it's our response to what God has done for us that can in many ways make or break us. But it's in the response. Well, let's suspend that just a second, and I'll tie it up. It may seem like a shaky point. How does Noah get into this? But turn to 280, it's 284 in my book. Well, you don't have to turn to it. Let's see, 284, I'll tell you what chapter it is, and then I'll just read, and you'll find it. It's always worthwhile speaking to a clever man. It's 284 in mine.
230. John, what was the Amos passage?
Amos was from chapter 2, verse 6 through 8. Genesis is Genesis 9, 21 to 25.
Where are you starting?
I'm just right at the beginning of the chapter there. I'll just read parts of it. Fyodor, he met his father in the drawing room, directly went in, he shouted to him, waving his hands, I'm going upstairs to my room, not into you, goodbye, and passed by, trying not even to look at his father. Then they go on, talk some more. On the next page, probably in your book, he talks about how he's furious with Smirnikov, but if he asked why, he could not even give an exact reason, except perhaps that he loathed the valet as one who had insulted him more gravely than anyone in the world. He hated Alyosha, At moments he hated himself intensely. Then down below, remembering that night long afterwards, Ivan recalled with peculiar repulsion how he had suddenly got up from the sofa and stealthily, as though he were afraid of being watched, had opened the door, gone out on the staircase, and listened for Fyodor Pavlovich stirring down below. Had listened a long while, some 5 minutes, with a sort of strange curiosity, holding his breath while his heart throbbed. And why he had done all this, why he was listening, he could not have said. That action, all his life afterward, he called infamous. And at the bottom of his heart, he thought it as the basest action of his life. Now that's pretty significant for Ivan. You know what's going to happen to him. You've read the book. You know what other things he's going to do in the book. That action, to try not to see his father, to try not to look at him, to try to not look at him, well, we'll see what he's doing in a second, but to go upstairs and then to come out on the balcony and stand there and listen to him is the basest action of his life, something he thinks of as infamous. At the bottom of his heart, he thought it was the basest action of his life. Now, for his father himself, he felt no hatred at that moment. Well, we can't say it's the hatred that's the base. It's no hatred. He felt no hatred, but was simply intensely curious to see how he was walking down there below and what he must be doing. He wondered and imagined how he must be peeping out of the dark windows and stopping in the middle of the room, listening for someone to knock. Ivan went to the stairs twice to listen like this.
I see signs of Peter sort of running up the stairs, sort of the denial.
Well,
and observing now, from the courtyard.
Yeah, from us, from standing outside.
Part.
Okay. That's a different thing is going on. The design and the meaning of Peter's betrayal and the meaning of this.
Mm-hmm.
They bear some similarities.
This is interesting
in terms of analogy and trying to make connections. It's very good, and you can come up with these like that one. I don't think that one works, see? It's got certain of the same components, like wheelbarrows and cars, have certain similarities. And go for it, you know, make that connection. And then check out and see if there's enough. See if the meaning is right. And I think in that one it isn't, because a different thing was being done. I think is all, you know, sort of certain situations are sort of archetypal. I mean, that business of standing outside the gates and, you know, and saving yourself and then watching, looking in and so forth. That's a situation that many people, that situation of Peter and Christ, he standing in the outside and Christ being inside and being tormented in the denial, is something that can work as an analogy. In many situations that we've been in our life, we've gone through denials like that. We have lied and so forth. Well, this situation of Ivan's looking on the balcony is another one of those situations that can work as a figure for things in our lives. If you sat down for a whole day and thought about these two true sort of archetypal situations, you would come up with some connections between the two, even though you will have to build a bridge between them. The bridge is not going to be apparent, so it isn't going to give off a flash of light that says, aha, that's the meaning. But you will have to build a bridge. But in the building of the connection between those two different situations, states of affairs, you will come up with some really good stuff, some good light. But it isn't of a, you know, it's like, there's nutrition in lots of different kinds of food, but you know, that wouldn't be so great.
It's a shot in the dark. It's just,
well, that's it. Shoot in the dark on these things, and to make connections like this, I hope that everyone today, tomorrow, this week will make an ass out of themselves. Just leap, you know, just You didn't do this, by the way, Kurt, but
read it out, you know, spit it out.
He who hesitates is lost, because again, we've talked about in education, the whole point is to miss. The whole point's to miss. It's not to get hit. The whole point of life is to recognize the weakness, not to, you know, beat your chest and your strengths, you know. But spit it out, and you'll be surprised how many really fine connections are made when that's done. I remember the last year, the discussion here was one that just, you know, was lumbering, and then boom, you know, it just exploded. You know, and then we just, ah, I wish I had that on tape, you know. It was just beautiful. But now I'm glad it wasn't. You know, I'm glad it wasn't, because then we wouldn't have any, we'd listen to the tape this year. We wouldn't have another discussion that might really catch fire. Okay, now why does this guy, and we can't buy off and say Ivan's a nut, you know, Ivan's neurotic. We can't do sort of a Freudian psychologist trip and say, well, he's a masochistic, neurotic, and blah, 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 blah. You know, that's just more what?
Rationalization.
Well, it, you know.
Oh, it takes it away from yourself.
That's a ham-handed thing to do, isn't it?
A ham-handed?
Ham-handed.
Sort of.
That reminds me.
Hey. No. But okay. What is it then? Why is that? Now we're to take this word for it. That was Ivan. You know, Ivan maybe ought to know here. That was the most infamous thing he did in his entire life.
He looked upon him without hatred, without any emotion at all, and saw his father, you know, like you can see something sort of objectively, but when he thought about it, he realized that it was also himself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. At that point, no.
No?
It seemed like that was...
See, I mean, look, now you're on the, direction. There's something to say about that, like himself. Mm-hmm. It's very important. If I see someone do something terrible, and I make the connection, I'm like that. Is that an infamous thing to do? Is that an evil thing to make that connection?
No.
No, it's almost the opposite, isn't it? If I can make that connection, if I can see where that weakness is my weakness, see, it's not an evil thing. It's not evil. It's a start toward what we'll talk about in just a minute is nothing human is foreign to me. That line that you'll hear again and again and again from me, you know, and it comes from Terence, said it first, and Dr. Osgard, Mary Enderley's father, the bishop. You know, was given his last talk to people, said, well, he was talking to the chaplains who were going off to World War II, and he says, and that wasn't the last talk, but it was one of the bigger, and the last talk with them before they go, and he says, and no matter what, don't forget what Christ said, you know, nothing human is foreign to me. And he says, no, Christ didn't say that, St. Paul said it. And he says, and don't forget what St. Paul said, nothing human is foreign. No, St. Paul didn't say it, you know. He says, well, I don't know, it's in there somewhere. No, it isn't either. It should be. Nothing human is foreign to me. Nothing human is alien to me. That's another translation. Nice one. Where have you heard that one before? I mean, I've talked about it before. Where have you heard it before?
Carol.
Yeah, okay. Well, Carol uses it. Somebody else in here in this book uses it. It's one of the branches of the Tao.
Right.
Nothing human is foreign to me. And one of the biggies. One of the big ones. But okay, what is it that he is doing here? Now, is the similarity here just coincidental? Well, Ivan comes in, no, I do not want to go in there. I'm going to bypass him. He goes to his room and then he goes out and he looks at his father, and it's an infamous thing to do. Is it just coincidental? It may be that it wasn't a conscious move on Dostoevsky's part, but this time I think it's so close and it's such a story that Well, heck, if you've read Genesis, I mean, you remember that, don't you? I mean, if you read Genesis and Noah, you know, goes out and it rains 40 days and nights and he's the righteous man, he goes out and God saves him and everybody else is lost, and then he comes back and what does he do first? Get smashed out of his gourd. Now that you remember, don't you? What a strange thing to do. And then you say, no, it isn't a strange thing to do. Oof. You know, oof. Okay, but you remember that. I think if you think about that text, the Genesis thing about Ham and Noah and Japheth and Seth, you think about that, I think what you would have to say about Ham is that when it says they saw his nakedness, I think it implies a kind of contempt. It may be humor, it may not be what his response, but a kind of contempt. Whereas the other guys knew the same thing but did not see his nakedness and didn't have the contempt. Now, what, when there's no hate, can there be contempt? Now, is that possible? We really have to, you know, this is a small part. There, this book, by the way, is filled with these small things that just, you know, explode with meaning. But here, what is Ivan like at this time? Now, you're in his shoes, and you do this. You don't hate, you're just curious. And you're get the picture, the dramatic picture. You're up, you know, up above them, or looking down, listening, and you're curious. You know very well what he's doing. He's probably drunk, as he almost always was, and he's sort of a grotesque picture we have of him at this time, and he's waiting for the message to come that his lover is coming to him. And you're sitting there thinking, you know, how can a guy be so deluded, you know, as to think this? This is crazy. You know lots of things about Dmitri, and Ivan knows an awful lot at this point. And he's sitting there looking at this guy, and then he says it's the most infamous thing. Well, what is one of the most infamous things we can do? It's very close to the Genesis thing. Ham was cursed. Or a kind of contempt. This doesn't look like contempt because the image we get for contempt is got a sneer. Doesn't say he was sneering, right? There's no emotional business here at all, is there? No emotional response at all to this nakedness of the father. A kind of curiosity. What kind of curiosity then will he say is the most infamous deed? What kind?
Might it be that he doesn't show compassion for the kind of real turmoil his father's name?
The fact that there is no emotion at all is something. It's something. And what single word would you use to describe Ivan's
indifference?
Well, he's curious. And
that was the state of his compassion, though, as far as dealing with his father. The curiosity was like he could watch anything from the top of the stairs and not. He might feel hurt or something by what would happen, okay, but he wouldn't do anything to...
All right, take that top of the stairs business. Now, at top of the stairs, figure, you know, I'm a stair. The top of my stair is mm-hmm. mine. And he is looking. No emotion. Oh. Now, what is it? What's going on?
Would that be the understanding?
Hmm?
The understanding to come to the top, to think you know when you don't know?
Yeah.
Man without a chest.
Responding, dissecting. Is he subjective, objective? You know that dichotomy, the subjective, objective thing.
Objective.
He's objective about his father.
He's objective about the father.
Well, he's really objective. I mean, there's no emotion involved at all. He's curious, intellectual curiosity, objective. He's listening. It's the worst thing he's ever done. What? You know, wait.
Yeah.
He doesn't make a connection.
But that's my father.
Yeah, he doesn't really make a connection.
It's like Nazis and Nazis and Jews, like, just experimenting on people just for the sake of curiosity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That kind of curiosity. Mm-hmm.
And yet, very highly lauded way of thinking, right? Objective. Well,
the connection there, though, with the Nazis is they were, the Nazis were indoctrinated, though, in that the Jews were inferior. Scapegoat is Ivan.
In a sense, the objectivity is an indoctrination in itself.
Like,
you know, if I wipe out the connection between you and me, and I wipe out the connection of emotion, mm-hmm. then I get myself out from under any absolutes. You know,
dirty fool.
Good luck. You know, you're bigger than I am, so good luck to me. But, you know. Outside of that, what do we got?
That is influence.
Yeah. What do we got? Now let's take one other connection, and I think you see maybe, hopefully, the connection between the Noah and this, you know, starting to make some more sense. And let's look one more place on 225 in my book. The engagement. Remember, Lisa is talking to Alyosha, and this is after he's gotten his finger bit, I think. And then he says, the great thing is now, Alyosha says, now the great thing is now is to persuade him that he is on an equal footing with us, in spite of his taking money from us. Alyosha went on in his excitement, but not only an equal, but even on a higher footing. On a higher footing is charming, Alexei. But go on. You mean there isn't such an expression as on a higher footing, but that doesn't matter because... Oh, no, of course it doesn't matter. Forgive me, Alyosha, dear. You know, I've scarcely respected you till now. That is, I respected you, but on an equal footing. But now I shall begin to respect you on a higher footing. Don't be angry, dear, at my joking. She put in at once with strong feeling. I am absurd and small, but you. Listen, Alexei, there isn't in all our analysis, I mean your analysis? No, better call it ours. Aren't we showing contempt for him? For that poor man, in analyzing his soul like this, as if it were from above, eh? And deciding so certainly that he will take the money? No, Lisa, it's not contempt. Alyosha answered, as though he had prepared himself for the question. I was thinking of that on the way over here. I mean, he's thinking about this connection between mm-hmm. having a mind and contempt. You know, being able to analyze and contempt. He's concerned with it himself. I was thinking about that on the way over here. How can it be contempt when we are all like him? When we are all just the same as he is? For you know we are just the same, no better. If we are better, we should have been just the same in his place. I don't know about you, Lisa, but I consider that I have a sordid soul in many ways. And his soul is not sordid. On the contrary, full of fine feeling. No, Lisa, I have no contempt for him. Do you know, Lisa, my elder told me once to care for most people exactly as one would for children, and for some of them as one would for the sick in hospitals. And then she says, ah, Alexei, dear, let us care for people as we would for the sick. Now, here's the contempt theme again. Alexei has used his head in figuring out what to do in this case. He's used analysis. He's thought about the guy. He's predicted what the guy will do. Mm-hmm. He is consciously saying, I mean, let's put him on another footing, higher footing, and so forth. It comes awfully close to manipulation, doesn't it? What is it? There's one element that makes it not that way. The one thing that kind of thinking needs and has to have is this...
realizing that you yourself aren't any good?
Well, that's almost starts something. That enables you, you have to have that realization. Then you can say, we are like him. Mm-hmm. We are like this man. We are no better than him. We're just the same. And if we are better, it's just because we're not in that situation. In that situation, we would do the same thing. We would do the same is the theme, really the basic meaning of nothing human is foreign to me. One of the things it means, we are the same. People outside of Christ can recognize that, as Terence did, who said it the first time. He's a Roman. In Christ, it might be a little easier to sustain it, in the sense that Christ really does break down the pronouns. You know, it's not you and me so much as it was before. It's not you and me. Now, and the irony is that, you know, Rich says lots that he's the destroyer of categories, and he does. Christ destroys categories. And one of the other things he does, you know, there's, you know, sort of like you can say, you are me, and yet I have a greater individuality after realizing that than I ever did before. And you have a greater individuality than you ever had. And so there's a kind of a destruction of categories, like you take the glass away and the water is, you know, there still, you know, and purer than ever. And much more clearly seen when the category is taken away. And yet there, we're getting really...
I'm having a lot of problems with what's going on right now.
Huh? Yeah.
I don't know what's going on right now, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
And I don't know, that's just a statement, I guess.
In terms of, said something and you missed it, or?
No, in terms of, you've said, you've been talking for half hour, and I don't see how it fits in. Into anything close to what this book is all about.
Okay. It's one of the things. There, you won't ever come up with something that the book is all about, you know, unless you use some category like life.
I guess it's personal. I suppose each one of us would answer that differently.
No. I mean, each one of you would find out another thing that the book is about.
Mm-hmm.
There is a vast area of overlapping. You know, it's like, you know, everybody will have a unique take, but there should be a huge area of sharing. It's not up for grabs. I mean, the book is not something that means anything, you know. That Dostoevsky is saying something about the whole world, and he is definitely saying something about himself, and he's saying something about all people. And we can try to get more of that rather than less, you know. And this is one of the real significant things, I think, the way Dostoevsky sees what Ivan does on the stair as one of the most infamous things that a person can do.
Talk about it for half hour and I still don't understand what he's doing on the stair.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't the slightest idea how it relates to Noah's Ark and all that stuff yet.
Well, what happened with Ham? You know, Ham goes to see his father's nakedness. Now, Ivan on the stairs is seeing his father's nakedness. Ham gets a curse, and Ivan realizes that event is worthy of the curse, the most infamous thing he's ever done. Now, there are connections there. Now, there was one kind of contempt, and we can't really say Ham had this variety of contempt for his father when he saw his nakedness, because the text isn't complete. The text from Ivan is much more complete, isn't it? When Ivan says, I have had no hate, you know, no emotion was involved, I was just curious watching the guy. That's a different kind of contempt. It has a lot to do with objectivity. Then we go.
Wait a minute. I don't see how curiosity relates to contempt at all.
Hmm?
I don't see as curiosity.
His kind. What he was doing. His kind. He says, "I'm just curious." And yet, what is the situation? He's above. He's on the balcony. He's listening to his father crawl around downstairs like a bug. And he's broken a connection, an emotional connection. There is absolutely none. And yet he is analyzing. And actually, now the thing from the engagement, the Alexei and Lisa passage, comes ahead of that, sets up that scene. That's how books work, at least a well-written book.
Okay,
so you have Lisa say, aren't we showing contempt for him? Analyzing his soul like this, as it were, from above. Eh? And then we hit later, Ivan, above, out there. He didn't want to see. He didn't want to have the contempt. Then he finally goes out and he watches him as if the man were dead or not there. Hears him and so forth. The contempt is in each of the examples that we've given so far. The contempt is there. One of the big themes is of the whole book is nothing human is foreign to me. I think the devil says that ironically later on in the book, but one of the big themes is that nothing human is foreign to me. Now a person who if I say, Joe is, nothing human is foreign to Joe, he knows that. It sort of means that Joe will not have a kind of contempt for other people, hopefully.
Does that mean you won't be curious about him then?
No. Mm-mm.
Then I'm lost again, John.
Curious, where have you come across curious before this year? Creative imagination, right? Creative thinking in the various kinds of thinking essay. No, curiosity by itself is not a problem. Curiosity without connection. Curiosity without a connection between what you're curious about. If I'm curious about you, Steve, just curious, and I'm looking at you, down on you, and I sit there and I say, well, I can see all these categories that Steve has. He has tendencies towards this, 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 no emotion about it, like that. I am doing what? Taking your clothes off. Mm-hmm. Taking your clothes off. And being of a certain age and a certain experience and a certain, history and so forth, I could do a lot of that. Scare them. Out of you. If I told you, I would only see one side of it. But since you are me, too, and there is a real connection, and none of the weaknesses that you have are lacking in me, something else can happen. Something else can happen. I can walk backward to you on certain things and cover them. And then deal with you as a whole human being, and not reduce you to categories and little tiny boxes and pigeonholes and files and things in the freshman psychology glossary. Well, you're this and this and this and this. There's a point in it as you get more education. There's a point at which you will be scared to death, because that's the way you're going to be responding to people. You're going to be figuring people out. You're going to be finding out where people's heads are at, That's one of the most demonic things that we can do.
But Ivan wasn't doing that when he was spying on his father, was he?
Isn't elsewhere. We this isn't the only instance that we have. What we are saying by itself isn't going to support. But because of what we know that precedes this, Ivan is the guy with what? The supercilious? And what is that, the root? I found, looked up the root of that, and it's really neat. The proud eyelid. The proud, you know, the haughty eyebrow. You know. Oh, my. You know, there is a kind of contempt there. And you know on the objective, somebody that is, you know, prides himself in objectivity, you know, and you say, you know, a great book. And you say, oh, well, yes, of course, but don't you know what Freud said? You know, I mean, that's a kind of a up on a balcony over the book kind of thing, a distancing, that a distancing, a holding reality off, that Ivan will say, and Ivan knows, as being, and in later years will say, that was the most infamous thing I ever did. And that makes me a scoundrel, he says.
Can I throw it in a connection, maybe?
Yeah, sure.
In one of the summaries from the lawyers, didn't they say that Ivan is exactly like his father?
But because he doesn't make that connection between being like his father, but just looks totally objectively at him, you know?
But wouldn't it be like he's looking down and seeing himself?
Not at all. He looks above, in godlike perspective.
You don't look to another person and see the same in you, or recognize that you're both the same.
The connection I get that in both instances, in that Old Testament thing in Genesis and in this book, there is that lack of compassion in dealing, in both of those. Lack of compassion that comes from lack of respect for.
Respect for love, would love be in there too, like respect.
I think respect comes out the
Lord. There's one other thing with love and things. I think for Dostoevsky, and I would agree that hate would be better. You see, one thing that up on the stairway, Ivan stands outside the Tao, doesn't he? He's outside the Tao. He's not responding. What is happening down there, by the way? Your father, now picture your father, is, you know, within the Tao, you know, doing everything wrong. He's your father. No response. Now, you know, a screen. No, you know, would be better than that. And part of I think the infamy of what Ivan is doing is that at that point he was outside completely. At that point, now he doesn't stay out there, right? Does he? Who knows what guilt is really well? You know, I mean, a lot of people in there, but Ivan really does. He says then he is a scoundrel. Okay, he's back in the Tao. He did not respond to his father in a certain way. And then he recognizes that as something bad. But for that moment, you see, that one action, that's his really bad, what he thinks is the worst thing. To where, in a sense, quit, well, in a sense, he was, in a sense, he was dead, you know. He was dead, and in a very real sense, what was going on in his head killed his father, in him. You know. So what? I mean, he didn't even, you know, so what? What's he doing? How's he doing it? No, so what? What? How? So what? What? How? What does it mean? You know the connection of the three, you know, the three things that Carol talks about. What? How? So what? What's the meaning? That's what he's doing. That's how he's doing it. Now does it start to kind of get closer to a purely objective method thinking? What is it? How does it work? That's it. Man does not make any more statement than that. Now, it makes a little more, you know, that I hopefully starts to make a little more sense why we were talking about objectivity, doesn't it?
Yeah, some connections are falling into place.
Yeah, and it'll take time. It'll take time. And one thing, you know, you're right. There is an innate rejection, I remember it, innate rejection of somebody making a big deal out of one passage. But lots of times when I felt that way, it was because I forgot. I didn't look at the rest, you know, and I was just looking at that moment. And much of what we're saying comes out of a feel for the character of Ivan in the whole thing. And you said, you know, in the trial business, he's just like his father. Well, you can also say, having seen the book, that he is and he isn't. You can say that Smerdnikov is talked of as being Ivan. Well, he is and he isn't. Smerdnikov, I think, never got down off the balcony in lots of ways. Smerdnikov was, and every year I have trouble, maybe it's the wrong word, because every year I have trouble remembering what word. There's a perfect word and it starts with C. Very simple word for, it talks about the way Smerdnikov meets the world.
Cunning?
No, it's not
conceit.
That one. Conceit? No, it's not
Ooh.
That one. It's close to connive, but it isn't. It's calculate.
Calculate.
He's a calculator. He calculates. I'll do this, and then this will happen.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do this, and this. Now, what does that do? When one calculates, what happens in your heart and in your mind, and what happens to your relationship to the world? Now, I'm not sitting here talking from a position of strength where I wouldn't know what anything about calculation. But when you calculate, and we've all done it, and we act like Smerdnikov, and when we do that, is it as bad as all that? What happens in our heads and in our hearts and in our relationship to other people? I'll do this and then so-and-so will do that. Now, rhetoric students, persuasion. You know, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. The potential. When you know something about persuasion, you will have far more potential at being a Smerdnikov than ever before. I want X. Let's see. So-and-so has so many strings, I'll play him and so that I get this. You know, we can do it. We can do it. I told you before about when I was about 19, I decided that, if I was too good at it. And I remember where it was. At St. Olaf, you know, outside the old, what's the music, old music building?
Chris Johnson.
Is that the one, the old one, next to Old Main? And I was right out there on that grass out there, and I says, hey, you know, I've got to give this up. And never again do it. And that has had implications on teaching. You know, it's had implications on everything. You know how to manipulate people. I will not do it. Knowledgeable. Contrive, connive, calculate. I want X response. It makes me God. And we are in his image, and we're pretty good at it, and we can play people. And that's what Smerdnikov is doing, and he ends up hanging himself. But notice, by the way, you land anywhere in this book, you know, and you can start to see ripples that go all over the place, don't you? Now, we just hit two things, the Alyosha one, the talk with Lisa, and the Ivan on the stairs. That will make connections. There are connections within this book that you can make to lots of other things that happen, you know, lots of other things that happen, walking over people. If we trod on the head of the poor, you know, the talk between the driver and Dmitri, Ivan on the road, lots of other connections. But we're getting in here, you know. And you just say, originally you said, what are we doing? You know, where are we going? Are we going somewhere? Yes, we are. But the only point that I'm going to is about reading a book. That's all. This is not really about, it is about Brothers Karamazov. It is about everything we've talked about, but it's going toward reading a book, a way of reading that is pretty well talked about in that Lisa and Alyosha discussion. Isn't there in all our analysis contempt for him in analyzing the soul like this, as it were from above, eh? And when we read a book, we will be doing this kind of thing. Once I said I would be embarrassed to use the same kind of analysis on an individual that I know. One reason is because you can't spend that much time with a person. With a book, you can go back and back and, you know, for years. But with a person, you're doing wild things to that person in your head while you're doing this process. You know, and you're seeing them in certain ways, and it can be really scary. But I wouldn't, you know, I want to know, I don't so much want to analyze individuals, because it's like trying to fix a spider web, and your hands are too big for it. But here you can learn a great deal about yourself and other people, about man, and stick with it and not make jump conclusions. Let's see, Ivan is the intellectual, Dmitri the sensualist. I mean, Dostoevsky says that, doesn't he? But he doesn't stop there at all, and he doesn't let you, none of those characters are anything but ambivalent. They have contradictions, every one of them. Alyosha, Ivan, Dmitri, Fyodor, how does he respond when his wife, his wife dies? You know, yay! And then he weeps, just bitterly. And that's Fyodor? But that's just one example, one on from the first pages. But anyway, it's about reading a book. And it's about living, this talk that we're doing. Isn't there, in all our analysis, contempt for him in analyzing a soul like this, as it were, from above, eh? How can it be contempt when we are all like him? We are all just the same as he is. For you know we are just the same, no better. And if we are better, we should have been just the same in his place. Let us care for people just as we would for the sick, just as if they would die tomorrow. I was talking with somebody, and they treat, in a sense, treat people as if they're going to die tomorrow, and also be with people as if they're going to live forever. And there's a kind of a irony and a pun for the Christian in that statement. But be with people as if they're going to die tomorrow and they're going to live forever. Then there's a connection between that and Zorba, and about the old man in the tree. You know, he meets a guy. If you, some of you have read that. I live as though I'd live forever. I live as though I'd die tomorrow. And I think somehow as a Christian we do both, hopefully. Our response is what we do in both situations. Both things were true. And in many ways, both things are true. Just as if they would die tomorrow and perhaps live forever. The theme, we would do the same, as behind Christ saying, call no man a fool. Call no man a fool. And Terence is saying, nothing human is foreign to me. And this is really crucial. This understanding, this way of looking at the world is crucial to for lives of joy in the world. And I think in many ways is behind the Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for they shall be comforted. And we get an image, too, in this book of many different people, and in many ways there are similarities to us. Now I want to go from that to I.E. Richards, something, a critic, literary critic, who talks about metaphor, and metaphor is like, my love is like a rose. That's a metaphor. Well, that's a simile, actually. My love is a rose is a metaphor. Now, he uses two words, vehicle and tenor. Tenor and vehicle are the two terms for two parts of a metaphor. And you can see, my love is a rose
has got two parts, love and rose, doesn't it? Love and rose. The tenor and vehicle are the terms I.A. Richard uses for the two essential elements of a metaphor. The tenor is the subject which the vehicle illustrates or illuminates. The vehicle is the figure that carries the weight of the comparison, while the tenor is the subject to which the vehicle refers. An example from Hamlet. Hamlet says, "What should such fellows as I do crawling between earth and heaven? What should such fellows as I do crawling between earth and heaven?" And that's metaphoric. There's a metaphor there. And there is it is a metaphor because there's an unmistakable reference to things that crawl, other things that crawl. And this reference is the vehicle, as Hamlet is the subject or the tenor. What should such fellows as I do crawling between earth and heaven? That isn't the obvious form of a metaphor, which is set up with an is. Love is a rose, my love is a rose. But it is metaphorical. Now,
John, would you go over tenor and vehicle?
Okay, I'll just read it again. Don't worry if you can't copy it down. This first part is from the Handbook to Literature, the Thrall Hibbard Poem, which, by the way, if you're interested in literature, is a tremendous book. Handbook to Literature, Thrall Hibbard and Poem. Tenor and vehicle are the terms I.A. Richards uses for the two essential elements of a metaphor. The tenor is the subject which the vehicle illustrates or illuminates. The vehicle is the figure that carries the weight of the comparison, while the tenor is the subject to which the vehicle refers. When Hamlet says, "What should such fellows as I do crawling between earth and heaven?" it is metaphoric. There is an unmistakable reference to other things that crawl, and this reference is the vehicle, as Hamlet is the tenor or the subject. To use the word crawl shows light, illuminates Hamlet's existence, Hamlet's being. And it's neat that he uses the word crawl, because you have worms, snakes, and infants. That's nice. It's not just a word that has one relationship. It's worms. I'm a worm crawling between earth and heaven. I'm a snake crawling. I'm an infant, innocent, evil. And then a slug, you know. The use of that word, that specific word, illuminates Hamlet, the generality. He's the abstraction. Hamlet is the abstraction, and crawl is a word that illuminates that abstraction, clarifies, explains. The vehicle explains in some ways the mystery of the subject, the tenor. Now, play a game with that. That's just good lit stuff. I mean, you know, metaphors are really neat. And when you read a poem, you can get something out of that little discussion of metaphor, but we're talking about reading. Now, a character in a novel, that metaphorical relationship between the tenor and the vehicle. Now, a character in a novel is a subject, is a tenor, is an abstraction. And what he has and does helps illuminate who he is. And in a sense, that what he has and does is the vehicle that explains him. Well, that's interesting. Nice way to look about lit. But the relationship between the reader and the book can be metaphorical. The reader is the subject, or the tenor, and the individual characters, including their contradictions, are the vehicles, illuminators of us. And I would hope that you read every book this way, whether it's biology, physics, lit, you know, whatever, theology, the Bible. Read this way. There is a kind of a metaphorical relationship between the reader and the book, and it can help you see your history, and in many ways find out what to pray about. You make connections between the characters in the book and what's being said in the book and yourself. And you do not sit in the balcony with a kind of objective curiosity and say, interesting. You make the connection. You establish a connection. You take these people and find out about yourself. And that is a way of reading, a different